This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Wing and Tail Boys podcast, your Northeast hunting and fishing destination. I'm Chris.
And I'm Angelo.
And we're your hosts. Join us as we navigate the woods and waters of the Northeast, sharing our passion for the outdoors.
Whether it's land management, outdoor recreation, hunting, or fishing, we're going to cover it all. With 40 plus years of experience in the Northeast, we'll provide insights, tips, and stories to help you make the most of your adventures and help you experience the wild.
So, tune in, grab your gear, and let's hit the woods together. And always remember, success is just a commitment away. Wing and Tail Boys podcast is brought to you by Truthsticks Custom Arrows. Built with FireKnock technology, Truthsticks Custom Arrows simply fly flatter, spin faster, and improve arrow efficiency downrange. With 2 signature arrows for the compound bow and a signature crossbow bolt, they've got something for everyone. If you're ready to take the guesswork out of archery and take the best performing arrow into the field, then check out Truthsticks Custom Arrows at wingandtailoutdoors.com and experience the truth of arrow flight.
Shit.
I'm not going to lie. They're kind of back there for show a little bit. It's been a minute since I played. Actually, recently I started picking it back up a little bit. But I used to play a lot. I used to play in college. When I was supposed to be doing homework, I was playing in college and doing open bars and stuff like that. That's exactly it, bro. And I'd be like, yeah, I'm just going to play for an hour and then I'll do my work. And next thing I know, I'm looking up, like 5 hours have passed. I missed dinner. Dog's crying because he wants to eat, you know, so it was a good time. But yeah, so guys, on the show today, we have Matt Buttermark, a.k.a. Matty Butts. How you doing today, man?
What's up, guys? How you doing? Thanks for having me. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Glad to have you in. We've been trying to make this happen for a couple of weeks now. I reached out to you, I think almost a month ago now, told you a little bit about the, like the Northeastern Hunter snapshot, like the series that I've been running. I told you I'd love to have you on, loved your trophy reel, if you will, on Instagram. And, you know, whether it was your schedule, it didn't work out, or I had an emergency pop up last minute, but I'm glad we finally got you on, man.
Yeah, it's been a little tricky trying to make it work, but happy we're getting it done today.
Yeah, for sure. And that has to do a little bit with your job, which we're going to get into here in just a second. But why don't you give the listeners a little bit, like the baseball card stat sheet of Matty Butts is.
Yeah, so, you know, my name is Matt Buttermark. I'm from Freehold, New Jersey. I'm 30 years old. I'll be 31 Saturday. So getting old.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. You know, I started off hunting when I was about 10. My family was never into hunting, never had anybody really show me how to hunt or anything like that. As I got older, I got into it. Good friend of mine, his father, you know, kind of took us and would teach us how to scout and what to look for and things like that. And then I just picked up on it and like I started growing with it and fell in love with it. I realized how much I actually enjoyed it and had a passion for it. And then as, you know, when I was younger, I never really got anything. You know, I would go out, didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, as I got older, I met people and other people who were involved in hunting, and I would talk and learn from them and do things like that. And then I started getting more and more involved, and I realized how to hunt and what to do. And then, you know, I started being successful with it.
I got you, man. Now, right off the bat, I got to ask you, the number 10 seems to come up a lot when I talk to people in New Jersey. And that's because that's like the minimum age in Jersey that you're allowed to hunt. You know, right? If I'm not mistaken.
So also for me, it was more of like, you know, I was like 10, probably 10, 11 years old, but maybe a little bit older. Not much, but maybe a little bit older. But, you know, at that time I was able to pull a bow back. You know, I was able to start shooting and practicing. I think younger than that, I never really picked up a bow in my life. Maybe at like summer camp, you know, but it's not a compound bow.
Right. Like the little red, the traditional bows or whatever, like the plastic ones. I got you.
So, you know, I messed around with those when I was younger, but I never shot a bow in my life. And then as I got older, you know, and I was able to pull a bow back and actually focus and pay attention to what I was doing, that's when I was able to start learning how to shoot and everything. And, you know, like I said, but I never, you know, I would go and sit in the woods, not shoot anything, not even see anything. Because I wasn't experienced, you know, I had no one to teach me, nothing. And then, as I was saying, my friend's father, he would take us scouting and teach us what a scrape was, teach us what a rub was, teach us what trails to, you know, pay attention to trails like this, and this is where you would want to hunt because the deer are going to come up trail and things like that. And back then, trail cameras weren't a thing. Maybe they were, but we never used them. So if
I got you.
Going out hunting, it was more of like going scouting and then going, okay, that's a nice buck. I know he's in the area. Come hunt the next couple of days. See what happens.
I got you. So I got to ask then, were you already enthralled with hunting through your friends' parents? Like, did you get into hunting because you knew people that hunted, or did you want to start hunting and then found people to go out with?
No. So I got into it from my friend's father. He took us and, like I said, he took us scouting and we would go walk in the woods and look for sheds and things like that. And that's when I fell in love with it. Like, I just enjoyed being outdoors. So fishing, I've always done since I was young. I've always fished. So I had like a little connection with fishing, hunting, being in the outdoors. And then, you know, I learned the whole hunting side of it and it really gained my interest a lot.
Okay. Yeah. So my upbringing is similar to yours in the sense that I started at 10 years old, but I guess I kind of grew up in a hunting family. I tell the story kind of often because it's my story, right? But long story short, my dad didn't hunt at all his entire life. And my mom's brother hunted, my uncle. And for years and years and years, my mom was trying to convince my dad to go out with my uncle. And finally, he gave in. He went out in 1990. For the first time, and I was born in 91. So I guess technically I grew up in a hunting family, but not my immediate family, if that makes sense, you know? Now, my uncle, as he was teaching us, and I use air quotes because he didn't really teach us how to hunt. It was more like, you know, Jersey hunting, bro. You go out in the woods, you throw some corn down or feed or whatever. You set up a stand, you got a camera out, whatever, right? That was the extent of hunting. Now, yeah, he walked around. He showed me what a rub was. He showed me what a scrape was, but I was never taught the importance of that or how to say, okay, I found this sign. What does it mean? And how can I use it to make a plan? What was your experience in that woodsmanship type of stuff? Like, was your friend's dad kind of just showing you what the stuff was? Or do you say, okay, this is a scrape and this is how you hunt it? or this is a rub and this is what it means type of stuff.
Yeah. So he would like show us like what a rub was and then kind of go in and explain to us like why it was there and what it was. Same thing with the scrape and you know, other deer sign. So he would say what it was and then kind of go in and explain it, you know, so we would have a better understanding of it.
So he was kind of like an instructor. It was,
yeah.
So the joke I tell, I literally just told the story like 2 days ago. The joke I always tell is this is the extent of my teaching of hunting. I asked my uncle one time if he could show me how to use a grunt call. He said, you want me to show you? I said, yeah. He goes, okay. Go in the woods, make a sound. If the deer come back, do it again. If they run away, never make that sound again. That was the extent of being taught how to hunt, you know? But in hindsight, going back to look at it, the spots that he put us in, whether he knew it or not, kind of line up with the stuff I've been learning along the way, right? Like he would put us on the edge of a thicket or he'd put us on a point at the, you know, at the top of a point rather than the bottom. So I guess he was putting us in the right places, but we were never being told how to, why we were being put there, if that makes sense.
Right.
You know, so I'm 30, I'll be 34 this year. 34. I'll be 34 this year. And, only in the last, I would say, 7 years have I really been analyzing, learning how to hunt, learning how to read signs, like building my woodsmanship. And I find it very difficult now in my older years to, I guess, become proficient in that kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
where I feel like had I been explained some of this stuff a little bit better in the past, that I would have been in better shape now. So bringing this back to your experience, what do you feel like you were given a head start in the whole hunting, scouting, figuring things out with the instruction or the leadership that you had to start?
No, I think it was good guidance. You know, I took what he taught us and I put it in my, you know, like memory bank, they say. However, it was useful as in going to scout the woods, like, okay, there's definitely bucks here because there's rubs or here's an old scrape. But it didn't, and that's where I'm going to get into this too, it didn't actually, just because you know there's a scrape there, right? Or you know that there's a rub there, that means there's deer there. That doesn't mean that you're going to go there and actually harvest a deer. That just means that they're in the area. So having the knowledge that there's a rub there, okay, there's a buck here, he's making scrapes, he's got a rub line, he's rubbing that deer, you know, depending how fresh the rubs are. Early season, obviously, you know, that's where they're summering. So there's different things you can look for like that. However, or that's where they're going to rub. I shouldn't say that's where they're summering. That's where they're going to rub. Does that mean you're going to be able to hunt and kill that deer? Maybe, maybe not, right? So I think that's more of identifying. Actual hunting it and learning, like, you know, what's going to increase my chances of harvesting a deer or getting a shot at a deer, that has nothing to, in my opinion, has nothing to do with it, right? That just tells me that there's deer there and that they use that area. Now, let's go into actually, like, all right, what's going to increase my chances of getting a shot on this deer? You know, obviously, there's different things that you can do. Put a camera out, see what deer is there, what deer are hitting those scrapes. If it's around the rut, you know, you're going to have different deer traveling. If it's during the rut, I'm going to set up. Sorry, there's traffic passed by.
It's all good.
If there's around the rut, you have scrapes, you know that they're fresh. There's going to be deer coming in through there. I would want to set up near there. If it's early season and you have a rub on a tree, that doesn't tell me like, all right, hey, you know, this is the spot to hunt just because there's a rub on a tree. Again, I'm going to scout the area as in different times of the day, either early or mid-afternoon, and see where the deer are coming from, right? Because let's say I'm set up over here, 100 yards this way, they're coming out of the wood line here. So now I'm setting up on a rub, but what does that mean when they're 100 yards away, right? So that's where I would say is in like, you know, just because there's sign there doesn't necessarily mean like, that's the absolute spot to hunt.
I gotcha. How do I want to put this? All right. So 10 years old, you're going in the woods, you're being shown this stuff. You're being shown these rubs, you're being shown these scrapes. Were you full of piss and vinegar? Like walking through the woods where you're like, that's a rub, I want to sit there. And then kind of learn through that maybe that wasn't the end of it. Like that wasn't the end of the puzzle. That was just the first piece that you laid down.
Yeah. So I, again, being young and going in the woods and seeing this, you're excited. You're like, oh my God, there's rub here. There's deer here. I want to sit here. There's been times where I would just go out and sit and watch and, you know, sitting in that area. Yeah. You might have deer coming through, but that's why I'm saying like, I learned just because there's a rub there, that's not the best spot to sit. Just because there's some deer sign doesn't mean that that's the spot where I'm gonna hunt, you know?
Okay. So at what age would you say? So at what age would you say that you went from that whole, I'm just excited to find sign to, okay, I'm really good at finding sign now. I know how to identify it. I know where to go to identify it. For example, I'm a big e-scout guy, pick stuff out on a map. I go into the woods and I'm not tooting my own horn here, but I tend to find sign where I expect to find sign, right? So at what age would you say, or what experience did you have that made this happen? Did you say that you went from, I'm just excited to find sign, to wait a second, light bulb went off, this is just the beginning, now I need to figure out how to use this?
What age was it? I don't think I can actually give you an age. I think it's just as I got older and got more involved and realizing, like, you know, again, I have sign here, but I'm going to hunt maybe 150 yards away. And that's where I'm going to harvest a deer. And that's what happened. And I realized that just because there was the sign there, I'm going to hunt either away from it or try a different area because deer move, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there's no telling and saying they're going to be here every day. I think it goes into scouting a little bit. So I'm different. A lot of people will tell you they're out with binoculars and they're scouting fields night and day. They're looking for the buck. They're going all over. And I think with social media now and different things, you have people who will film them, you know, film themselves going here and there. Dude, I'm so simple. Like, I have spots. I'll go in, I'll put a camera up, and I'll run that camera, and I'll put corn out. I'll run it for like three weeks to a month. And if I don't have a shooter for me on there, I'm pulling that camera and I'm trying a different spot that I have. And also Jersey, you got to realize Jersey's so condensed now and congested that these deer are forced to go into spots. And as soon as you put corn out, you're going to have deer on the camera that day, pretty much, right?
Yeah.
So your chance of finding out what deer, and a lot of spaces now are so much smaller. So you're getting more deer in these spots. I think you're able to locate a shooter buck in a day to 2 days now compared to how it was 10 years ago. Because there was more fields, more farms, more area for them to travel. Now it's strips and between houses and back behind houses. So I think it's a little easier now.
Bro, I don't know if you're familiar with the Fort Lee, Bergen County kind of area of New Jersey.
That's up north.
Yeah. Yep. But literally Fort Lee is one side of George Washington Bridge. So the George Washington Bridge goes from Fort Lee into the city. But I have family who live in Fort Lee and they have like bucks that you would drool over in their backyards, eating their gardens and bedding under their peach trees and shit. Like there's no reason for that. It's like,
well, that's unfortunate.
It's crazy.
This is how New Jersey's become, you know, it's like the Garden State, but it's not the Garden State anymore. It's everything's become.
I literally just made that exact same joke on a podcast. Like, I think it was a podcast that posted last week. I was talking about new like regulation changes throughout the whole Northeast and all that stuff. And I actually got into the lack of forest management in New Jersey. And on it, now we're going on a little side tangent, so I'll make it quick, but it's very frustrating because we were the Garden State. Technically, we are still the Garden State. And honestly, the further south you go, the more of a Garden State it looks like. Mm-hmm. But up where I'm from, what garden? There's no, like, you drive down the road and you can literally stare into the woods for a mile. There's no undergrowth. There's no understory. There's no new growth coming up from the bottom. And quite frankly, that's the reason why we lost our quail. You know, New Jersey had a phenomenal wild quail population years ago before either of us were born. And for lack of management, it's gone down. It's gone to shit. And I've seen them do burns. Like I've seen them try to do forest management stuff, but it's always in places where you can't hunt.
Right. It's always wild. You know, like you said, places you can't hunt.
Exactly. So, and the deer know it. The deer know where to go, you know, and we all know if there's timber management done, the deer are going to go to it.
The deer are forced to go, you know, in spots you can't hunt, or they're going into residential neighborhoods where it's like, hey, you know what? In order for me to hunt this, I have to knock on somebody's door and get permission in their backyard that has woods behind it, hopefully. Exactly.
Literally. Yeah. And then you got to worry about getting permission from the rest of the neighbors because you're within the safety zone. It's a little crazy. And I'm sure you know by now there's like a group or an organization of people in New Jersey that have like this really like these fancy expensive lawyers that like go town to town, try to pass non-discharge laws. So yeah, you can hunt, but you just can't discharge a firearm. And it's like, well, what do you want me to use, a knife?
We're almost at 100% green up in the mountains of New York, which means the majority of the country is in spring or summer food plot mode. If you're in the market for some seed this year, you have to make sure the Vitalize seed is on your list. Whether you're running a traditional system or a no-till system, they've got you covered with products like annual clover, clover plus with chicory, or their 1-2 punch of nitro boost in the summer and carbon load in the fall. They've also got natural amendments to help give your food plots and seeds the boost they need to thrive. More important than that, Vitalize Seeds' focus starts with the soil to help solidify your plots for years to come. So whether you're looking for some seed this warm season or simply looking for some answers to your questions, head on over to VitalizeSeed.com to find your solutions.
You know what's funny? That's how it is around here. Like, you can't, the town ordinances around here is no discharge of a firearm. And, you know, it's, I'd be honest with you, around here, there's really nowhere to even shoot a shotgun because it's all built up in houses and apartments. Mm-hmm. It's gone.
And the truth is, like, okay, if you want to limit the use of, like, guns, you're not comfortable with somebody shooting shotguns, that the houses are too close, okay, fine. What's the problem with a bow? And why do these no discharge laws include bow and arrow in it? Like, they're not in the same realm. They're just not.
Yeah, so I read the town ordinances because most of them say no discharge of a firearm. Bow's not considered a firearm.
Okay.
Right? So you don't need a firearms ID card to purchase it. You don't need to walk into, what, Walmart and buy it over the counter. So it's not considered technically a firearm, right?
Okay.
Yeah, so that that's fair. However, read your town ordinances. I'm not telling you to run outside and start winging arrows all over the place, but...
Matty B said, I can shoot this, bitch.
Do me.
No, that's awesome, man. So coming back to the scouting and all that stuff. So you make a good point. Like, corn baiting, if it's legal in your state, it's a tactic and a tool that you can use, no problem whatsoever. Now, my change, like I asked you where your shift went from just being content finding sign to really wanting to figure stuff out. For me, it was I'm from Jersey. I'm from Bergen County. I went to college here in Pennsylvania, and then I moved to New Hampshire out of college. So when I got up to New Hampshire, I didn't have the woods that I grew up hunting anymore. I didn't know the woods like the back of my hand. So I was almost forced into it, where it was like, if I want to keep hunting, I got to start to figure stuff out. And to be honest with you, with the exception of maybe like a salt lick in the summer or something like that, I've actually completely gotten away from bait. Like, not that I'm against it. I wouldn't be opposed to using it. But New Hampshire, you couldn't bait during the season. PA, you can't bait during the season. New York, you can't bait at all, which my family has some property in New York. And I only hunt Jersey early season. And if you're hunting early season, you have all the feed trees in the world to go out and hunt. So I haven't really done much with the bait side of things for, I'd say, probably 10 years now. But if you, let's say you put some bait out, you put a camera on your bait, you get some deer on camera. Are you the guy that's hunting the bait, or are you the guy that's hunting, like you said earlier, 150 yards away from it? Because when we were talking about that, we were talking about sign. But are you the guy that's hunting on the bait, or are you hunting away from it and just using the bait as a draw tactic and getting them in their travels?
So I definitely hunted over bait. 100%. I know a lot of people frown upon and say that's not hunting. It's not to a certain extent. However, just because you put, like I said before, just because you put corn out doesn't mean the deer are going to come in and, oh, it's still hunting.
You still got to make the shot.
Yeah, it's increasing your chances a lot. But there's definitely been deer where I've been like hunting over bait and they don't come into the bait. So I have to hunt off of the bait. This deer right here is prime pointing.
You had it the first time. That one in the corner. Yes. Yeah.
This guy right here, prime example, you know, he wouldn't come into bait and I had to hunt off the bait for him. So I would keep the bait going because the does would come in. However, he would just not come into the corn. So, you know, around the rut is how he actually wound up getting here.
Made a mistake.
Following does and chasing them. And I was actually hunting, my tree stand was over, which I didn't even realize. I put my tree stand up and there's an apple tree. Like right to my left below me. And I didn't even realize it was an apple tree. And the deer was, I'd be sitting there and I had the deer coming in right underneath me. And I'm like, man, what are they eating? Sitting there eating apples. Had no clue it was an apple tree because I never really looked at it. You know, I was so content on hunting over here by the corn. And then I put the stand there. And this is what I was telling you before, as in, you know, I have pictures and videos of it, but we made fake scrapes, mock scrapes. Mm-hmm. That deer right there came in and I have the video of him hitting the mock scrape and pissing in it and then putting his horns all over the tree and rubbing the tree. And I'm like, holy shit, you know, he's here. And I wound up getting him a couple days later.
Okay. We're going to plug our boy here. What stuff did you put in your scrape there?
So that, I did a couple scrapes. The first one I did was rack getter. I used the like hot to trot stuff. That was more towards the bait. And then up towards me, we used, I'm trying to think of the name of it. Give me a second. It's good. I can picture it right now. My buddy got it and he said, here, try this. It was like a green, red, and blue. There's three different.
Oh my goodness. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Give me a second.
I used it before I linked up with Rat Getter. I used it also. Buck Fever.
That might be it.
Right? The stuff that.
It may be Buck Fever.
Why am I drawing a blank here? No, I got to look it up. Buck Fever Synthetics. Nailed it.
Let me see. I'm looking it up right now. Yes.
That's the stuff Troy Potter uses.
Yes, that's exactly it. and we sprayed that in there, and we made the wicking branch because I got those, the rope rack, you know what I'm talking about, they hang in a tree, rack rope. I got that from Racketter. I put those out, and I used like the pre-orbital on those, and then again, off of that, I used, my friend had some of this, he said, here, try this, you know, it's two different scents you're going to have, it may increase because more, it may smell like more deer near it. So we did it. Mm-hmm. And we put the camera on it, we put the video on it, and I actually pull it up and show everybody while I'm on the phone, you know, while we're on the park. Such a cool, such a cool thing that he came in and I couldn't believe it, you know.
So while you're looking for that video, if you're a Troy Pottinger guy, then you've seen this, you've heard this 100 times probably. But I heard a podcast of his where he kind of talks about his scrape mixture. And I started making my own, same thing, interdigital, doe urine, buck urine, whatever I could find that was a gland that they would excrete on the ground, I put it into one bottle. And anything they would put into a licking branch, I put on another. Now, the cool thing is the licking branch is the licking branch, right? Their preorbital gland doesn't change with the rut, but their urine does and their interdigital changes. So I ended up making a licking branch mixture, a non-rut or pre-rut ground scent mixture, and then a height of the rut mixture. Those ground scent things, the scrape scent, has also become my cover scent. I spray that shit on my boots. And it's incredible how deer just follow it. They like nose to the ground walking my trail. It's incredible.
So here's the video I'll show you real quick. This is him stopping. He's pissing in the... Can you see it or no?
I lift it up just a little bit. There we go.
I'm going to restart it for you.
Oh my God, dude. I thought those antlers were part of the tree at first. He's fucking...
So that's him. He's stopping and pissing in it. And then... The other video I have of him is him walking up here. He's slamming his horns on the tree.
That's awesome, dude. I mean, that's great footage. Like, cause that's the cool thing about these trail cameras, right? Like if you're someone, do you record your hunts when you go hunting? Do you bring a camera out with you at all?
And some, I mess it up every time. Little funny.
Okay. So good.
This is a little learning lesson for anybody who wants to film their hunt. Here I am young and, you know, I'm like, all right, I'm going to film my hunt. So I get this camera and I put it on like a little camera stand in a tree. And I'm like, man, I want to be able to see what I'm doing when I'm up there. So what do? I put it on my right. So I screw it in and I'm sitting there watching and I put it like this so I can watch as I'm, you know, as I'm sitting. Well, what happens? Because I sit when I shoot. I start hitting the camera when I draw back. I'm leaning like this. And again, young and stupid, I set my tree stand up. How it should be nice and even. I set it up like this on a little slant. So now I'm like leaning forward like this to the side. And I do have it on video. That is a funny video. I did kill the deer. And probably it's one of my biggest bucks I've shot. So
that's awesome. My cousin actually last year, first time recording, first deer that he tried to shoot at with the camera on. First time really using a crossbow with the camera. Goes and takes a shot and literally shoots the screen off the camera. Now we don't know if it was the bolt that hit it. We don't know if it was the limb that like, you know, extended back and like smacked the lens off. All we know is that he didn't get the footage. I think he actually killed the deer, which was the cool thing. But he hit her low. He hit her lower than he was aiming. And I would imagine it's I think he hit her. Let me think. The right limb hit the camera, and I think he missed right because the left limb had more energy coming forward than the right limb had. And he ended up harvesting her. He recovered her and everything, but he came home and the camera lens, like the screen was like hanging down and shit. Dude, that's like one of those things that happens and you're pissed because like you're out $600 or whatever you spent on the camera. But at the same rate, it's like, that's a story and that'll
never happen. Trust me, I have stories that people who know me know the stories and it's hysterical every time because it's a great thing to have. And he will tell that story like, dude, I shot this deer and I blew my camera.
Exactly. And I didn't get it on camera, but it's for a good reason.
So my learning lesson would be anybody who's going to film, take the camera, move it to the left side. I know it's a little harder to peek over and look at the camera to make sure you get everything, but it's going to be out of the way. So when you go to draw back, you're not hitting it and, or put it up. Okay.
Now I should ask you're right-handed. You're right-handed shooter.
I'm a right-handed shooter. Yeah.
Okay.
So, and like I said, I sit most of the time when I shoot. So again, me putting it right here was a dumb idea because when I was drawing back, I was hitting the camera with my elbow.
Yeah, that's a good thought. I never thought of that. Now, when I set up my camera in the tree, I like to set it up so that way when I'm sitting, like you're saying, it's maybe at like chest level. But I use the camera arms that I use. If I have one, I have one in here somewhere, but I'm not going to go crazy looking for it. They usually have three sections to them. So I can actually extend it far out to my left and then bring it back. So that way the camera is like here, but like where I need to draw is out of the way. Now I'm a lefty. So I put everything on the left side. But when I stand
up, out of the way.
That is now at my waist. And most of my shots are going to be taken standing up.
So
most of them. If I need to take a shot.
This is another thing I learned. What you're saying is, my camera arm at the time was not like a fancy. Like, I just ordered like a muddy one that you could actually move and like stand out. Like the one I used was like a screw in, like almost like a little selfie stick type of thing that you just threw into the tree. And it was like this long, so you know you didn't have much room.
Where it was.
Yeah, pretty basically. Much. I mean, you could bend it, but it wasn't anything special.
Sure. Now the reason I bring all this camera stuff up is because you showed me the videos on your phone, and I can see it in your face how excited you still get talking about this buck. Now, one of the controversial things that are going on in the hunting industry now is, are using cameras ethical? That's neither here nor there. I use them. You use them, right? It's a tool in the toolbox. And I think what makes them unethical is how you use them rather than the camera itself. But without getting into that, the cool thing about these cameras is that you now have a story to go with this buck. And the reason I asked you if you have your camera is because if you don't hunt with a camera, some of us, the only way we get to share the story of the deer is with these trail cameras. You know, now granted, a lot of guys say, "Yo, I shot that buck. It was the first time I ever saw him. No, I never saw him hunting. Never had him on camera." Like that happens really often. But those bucks that you're chasing on purpose and you play this cat and mouse, and whether it was, you know, one season, you saw him early season and got him late season, or you played this game with him for 2 or 3 years, either way, now you have, like you're saying, these videos to show, like, look at this buck. Like he was on these scrapes. This is how I got him. And you're able to put it all together where maybe otherwise without that camera you wouldn't.
Right. So I have years from this deer behind me. I have a couple years of pictures of him where he was a little basket eight and then he grew and grew. And I knew it was him because, and this seems to be like one of the deer I talk about in a lot of these podcasts, but this.
Well, it's 'cause it's right
there. Well, no, not only that. This deer, he was such a fun deer to hunt. And it was, I've said it before, he's like, almost like I killed a friend because this deer and me grew had so much like chemistry and history with each other. And I knew it was him because he was blind in his one eye. So I would call him Peaky. Like Peaky Blind.
Shit. I like that.
So
yeah.
Years of watching him on a camera, I knew it was him, number one, from his eye. And number two, I mean, you could tell his rack has been the same, just smaller, and then it would grow each year. But, you know, so I had history with this deer, and I went up the year before I did harvest him. I had put a bad shot on at that like 30.
Like hit him or
no? Oh, I hit him a little high, and
yikes!
I was so upset, and I was like, "No way!" And I hunted him real hard that year to get the kill, but I just couldn't connect. And then the following year is when I got him.
Now, is there something that went wrong in that first shot? Like, what did he duck your arrow? Was it a bad shot execution?
No.
Did you rush your shot? Like, walk me through that first encounter.
Definitely rushed the shot. So I was hunting out of a ground blind that day, and I remember it. Like it was yesterday. I was hunting out of a ground blind, and I got in there early, maybe like I was hunting in the afternoon, and I got into the ground blind maybe around like 12:31 p.m. And I'm sitting there thinking like, all right, you know, this deer's not coming in until later. But I'm sitting there, and there's all tall grass. Like where I was hunting is like almost like a CRP field, and there's all tall grass, and there's a highway like way out to my right. And I'm sitting there like, all right, so he's going to come from the left because that's a highway. And I'm like sitting there just watching to the left, watching, waiting for him. And I just do like one of these. I like look to the right, and I was like, and I'm watching antlers coming through that CRP field. And I'm like, no way. Like this deer crossed the highway. And it was now around like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. This deer crossed that highway at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, came into that CRP field and worked his way right down. And I'm watching him and I'm like, this deer is going to like bust me. I'm on the ground. The wind was blowing towards the highway because I thought he would not come from there, right? I'm sorry, it was blowing, was blowing towards the highway. And I'm like, this deer did not bust me, walks right down about 25, 30 yards, comes around, turns like this, and starts eating. And I'm like, I think it just happened so fast and unexpected. I was, you know, they say, like, always expect the unexpected. And I was set up like, all right, this deer's coming from the left. He's going to walk in like this. And as soon as I see him walking in, I'll draw back. Like, I played it out in my head. But he threw me for a loop, and it was complete opposite.
Yeah.
And I think maybe I just got so, like, I couldn't believe that he came in from the right. Holy shit, he's standing now in front of me. So I think I rushed the shot, and, you know, I think I just hit him a little high. Like, I just drew back, and I was so focused on, like, this is another thing for anybody hunting. I was like, they say, don't count your chickens before they hatch. I was like, all right, I got this deer. He's done. I'm going to call my friends. They're going to come, you know, help me drag him. And I just drew back and I shot. And I was like, all right, I hit him. And I watched him. He stopped and ran. I mean, he ran and then stopped. And I was like, I definitely hit him. And I waited a little bit. And then I watched him run back across the road. And I'm like, no way. So I followed and I had nice blood and everything. And then I tracked him for like 100 yards and nothing. And I was like, all right, let me back out. And I wound up getting him back on camera that, you know, that same year. And I hunted him more and I couldn't connect.
Do you think that there's any chance, like, so how far from your blind was that highway, would you say?
More than 50 yards.
All right. So there's a chance he could have been, but with all intents and purposes, there's a chance he could have been bedding between where you were sitting and the highway rather than him walking.
Because that's where walk in from. Like, I have to park up there and walk. Yeah.
Okay.
So I
gotcha. Yeah, that's kind of crazy. Crossing a highway midday. You don't see that. I mean, you see doe on the road midday.
Yeah, I guess, but you know what? I mean, I don't know. Unless he was bedded down like right against the road and just didn't pay any attention to me, like getting out and walking in, possible. But I don't think so, because, you know, I had to walk right through there. So, yeah.
You know, guys, in today's day and age, scents, lures, and attractants are a big part of our hunting experience. When it comes to choosing a product, we here at Wing and Tail look no further than Rack Getter Scents. At Rack Getter, you'll find unique, innovative, one-of-a-kind products that bring the deer in and keep them coming back for more. They also have products for bear, turkey, fish, and more. Most importantly, being a local small business, Gerard hand delivers every product to his dealers, so you know he's got his finger on the pulse. So if you're looking to up the odds this fall and you'd like to support a local small business while doing it, head on over to rackgettersense.net and check out what they have to offer.
That's pretty. So I meant to ask you this earlier. New Jersey is kind of cool in the sense that the way I break New Jersey up is into three regions. And it's not like, yeah, anyone, oh yeah, I'm from North Jersey, Central Jersey, South Jersey. That's not what I mean. What I mean is you have Appalachia, New Jersey, where you're part of the Appalachian Trail and you have a whole bunch of mountains and shit. Then you have the Pine Barrens, where everything is like wide open. And if you find a thicket of laurel, that's where all the deer are going to be. And then you have just the flatland crop areas of New Jersey. Like ag land. What region of New Jersey?
That ag land. There's no mountains. Okay. There's nothing. And then there's no pine berries. It's all, you know, farms and residential.
So you do live in the Garden State part of the
state. A little bit from what's left, but they're tearing a lot down, you know?
Yeah, I got you. So how do you, when you're out hunting, when you're out scouting, how much stock do you take in using those fields to your benefit? Like the ag fields, I'm saying.
Not much. Again, most of my spots are private spots. So one of my farms that I hunt is an 80-acre farm, right? I'm sorry, 60-acre farm, but it's got property that backs out, so it's like 80 total. But it's 60 acres, and there's fields that are like rye fields, and I've done like food plots there before. And thinking like, oh, these food plots are gonna crush it here. Like, this is solid. Like, I was planting sugar beets sugar beets, turnips. Yeah, it was a mix. It was a big bag of mixed stuff, and I did it all. I'm gonna crush it. I put all that there. They went through it in like, I don't know, a couple days, and it was like a nice size. It was a nice size pot. It wasn't like something small. They went through it, and then most of the time they spent their time out in the fields and like the rye and hay fields. And I was just like, I just did all this for nothing. And I realized then, like, you don't have to do all that. You know,
what are they growing mostly down in your area? Like, as far as the ag is concerned, is it mostly corn, like a rotation of corn?
Yeah, mostly corn, soybean. I'm trying to think of what's really left around here. A lot of there's sod farms, but I guess a lot of corn, majority of it would be corn. Yeah.
Okay. Now, the reason I ask that question is because a lot of people aren't aware that corn, like, yeah, deer love corn the way humans love candy, but candy doesn't give you any nutritional value. You know, and corn is very much the same for deer. So yeah, they're going to eat it because they like it and it's sweet and it tastes good. But eventually they're going to search for some food that's got those nutrients in them. So if you're saying that you have this private property with, you know, rye fields and stuff, and there's corn and beans around, if you were to plant something as simple as clover in a nice little corner of that field, that might be something that they don't have access to in that area. And it might be something so simple. But if you just throw like a half acre plot of clover in there, it might just be something different enough that it attracts them, and clover can withstand, you know, browse pressure very, very well. You know, so that could be something to think about moving forward.
There's clover. There's all like white clover out on this farm too. So they're there eating that. There's five ponds on the farm, so they have their water source. There's bed there. There's there's all like they have everything. There's acorns there. There's so much stuff for them that they don't have to leave. They do not have to leave.
I got you.
They do. You know, that's what they. Yeah, they do leave. So it is what it is. It's just, you know, part of hunting. You got to get in there and hunt.
So are your private places, are they like friends of the family people? Like, are they just people you know, or are they permission pieces, like knocking on doors and getting permission, combination?
Some are family, friends, and some are just, hey, doors I knock on, and you know, they say, yeah, you can hunt here, and okay, thank you. And, you know, I keep, they become friends because they see me often, or, you know, every year I stop in, hey, how are you? I just want to make sure it's okay that I can still continue to hunt here, you know, things like that. So, yeah, I mean, I say a mixture of both.
So talk to me about your strategy when you're going and knock on a door. Let's say you found a piece of private land, you located the owner. They're not a family friend. They're no one you know. You're going a cold knock on a door. Talk to me through your process of getting permission to hunt.
My first time ever doing it, I was so nervous. I'm like, oh my God, they're not going to say no, that people hate hunting, this and that. I go up, ring the doorbell, I said, hey, can I hunt here? No. Okay, see you later. And I was like, man, I'm not going to get anywhere doing this. So I changed it up and I realized people are people, right? I walk up, I knock on the door now, I say, hey, how are you? I introduce myself. My name is Matt. You know, I'm a bow hunter. I live in the area. I only bow hunt, which I do. You know, I'm not going to use a gun. I was wondering if I could bow hunt your property. Most of the time, they'll be like, I don't know, you know, what's the law, this and that. I break down like, hey, listen, here's the law. I can pull it up on my phone for you. You're allowed to be 100, you know, I said 70 yards, whatever it is, 50, 70 yards. You know, I'll be far in the back, away from everything. I'm not going to shoot towards the house. I'm up in the trees. In the event that something were to go wrong, the ground is my backstop. And you got to kind of explain stuff to people. You know, what people don't know, right? I'll put it to you this way. If you don't know finances and somebody comes up and starts talking finances to you, you feel uncomfortable and you're like, you know, I don't know. Your guard goes up. If you explain it to somebody and listen, I eat the meat, whatever I don't eat, I give to family, friends, whatever, you know, like things like that. And you explain it to people. I think people will have a better understanding of it. Also, I recommend if people are looking for hunting spots and they go do this, like at that time, that's your chance to really change people's view of hunting too. For someone who doesn't hunting. So that first impression, really either spend the extra couple minutes and don't just talk to them about like hunting. Like, you know, you could talk to anybody about anything. Yeah.
Small talk.
And I think like that will break the ice of people like, wow, he's just a hunter. He's here to kill the deer. Like, you know, explain to them like, hey, listen, you know, we feed our family. Times are tough right now. We all go food shopping. Look at the price of meat, right? This is just a better alternative for me to not spend so much money for meat for my family and I.
Yeah. So I got to ask you.
I was just saying different ways to explain things and just talking, I think, was really what helped me out and realizing, you know, like I said, people are people and they're going to listen and if you explain things, they're a little more at ease.
And if they're not willing to listen, quite frankly, I don't know that I want to hunt on their property anyway, because the way I look at that is if someone isn't willing to listen to you talk and they give you permission or they're just like, whatever, it's like, what problems am I
stepping into? So quick little thing with that. I was hunting this property. It was a beautiful piece of property, deer, turkey, ducks, like everything was there. And I was hunting it I had permission from the owner and they wound up selling the property, right? So I said, okay, they sold the property. I said, I'm going to go there, introduce myself to the new property owner and ask for permission. I go there and like the front of the yard is a business and then it's all woods and field and everything. The guy, I pull in there and I see people and I said, hey, how you doing? My name is Matt. I'm looking for the owner of the place. You know, I was previously hunting here with the old owners. I'd like to continue to bow hunt here. I couldn't believe the response I got. The guy was like, the owner will be here in 5 minutes. He'll talk to you. I said, okay. So the guy comes flying in the driveway and comes like flying up to me and starts with his finger in like my face, like, you're trespassing. I'm calling the cops. I said, whoa. I said, listen. I said, I'm just, you know, I'm here to ask if I can continue to hunt here. And he's like, I'm calling the cops. You're getting arrested. This is trespassing. I said, you know, I just came here to ask for permission. How else are you supposed to do it? I said, and this is a business. You're running in the front. So isn't a business like public if somebody wanted to come here and inquire about your business? He's like, it's posted. You're not allowed to trespass. I'm like, okay, you know what? So after all this, and he's screaming at me, and I'm like, you know what, man, look, I'm not looking for problems. I'm just looking to bow hunt. That's it. So he threatened me. He was like, I'm going to call the cops and this and that. And then I had the conversation with him like, hey, listen, I understand the law. I am a police officer. I'm not trying to use that to my advantage. However, I'm safe. I'm not someone who's going to come here and rob your property, rob your tools, whatever. I'm just looking to bow hunt. You're a cop. Where do you work? This and that. The whole nine. And I was like, all right, you know what, man? Then he calmed down. He's like, you can, like, just flip the switch. He's like, all right, you want to hunt here? You can hunt here. And I'm like, absolutely not. After what you did, I said, no. I said, thanks. We'll talk. I got my car and I left. I never went back there. And he was like, yeah.
Hopefully you didn't have a stand back there or anything.
I pulled everything out once they sold the property because, you know, I didn't exactly prime point. Like, you don't know how somebody's going to react. So, yeah, I just, what you're saying, that is like, no, I'm good. After that experience, I'm good.
100%. Now I got to ask you, I read a book. I don't know. My cousin gave me this book probably a solid 10 years ago now. I forget the author, but the book was literally titled Hunting Pressured Whitetails. And the book was written by somebody who was from Michigan, where at the time was the most pressured hunting state in the country. And one of the tactics that he used when knocking on doors was to make a resume. And he would, you know, this is who I am. This is what I do for work. This is my history, my background, blah, 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 whatever. And he would go and knock on doors and he would ask for permission very, you know, respectfully. And people would say no. He'd say, okay, no problem. Well, here's my resume. My name is such and such, whatever. You know, if you change your mind, please feel free to give me a phone call. Thank you so much for your time. Have a great day. And he'd walk away. And he said what he found over time was that people are so protective of what's theirs that at first glance, they don't know you. You're a stranger. What do you want with my property? Almost always right away, the answer is going to be no. But if you leave a piece of paper with them, maybe they'll throw it in the garbage and never hear from them again. Fine. Those people, you were never going to get to hunt their land anyway. But someone who then takes that resume and puts it on their kitchen table and goes about their day is going to pick that resume up at some point later on and read it. And they're going to go, Matt Buttermark, he's a local police officer, never been in trouble with the law, family man. You know what? Maybe it wouldn't be such a bad idea to let him hunt on our property. You know, so no up front isn't always no. And my mom taught me growing up, you never burn bridges. Now, that was always in reference to a job or a friend or something, right? But very similar to this, if someone says no, that's not the end of the conversation. It might be. But it could also be the beginning of the conversation. And if you do it the right way and you don't get angry and you walk away on good terms, you might get it back.
I have a spot now that I've tried to hunt. It took me like 4 years to get this spot. I would knock on a door every year and they'd be like, oh, you again. And I'd be like, yes, now it's me. Hope you guys are doing well. You know, if you guys are interested in letting me bow hunting this year, I would still love to hunt here. And I would offer people like, listen, I'll rake your leaves. I'll cut your grass, things like that. They wanted nothing to do with any of that. Eventually, it just took of me saying, listen, I just want one deer here, and then I'll leave. You guys will never see me again. I just want one deer. They were, I guess, once they realized, like, okay, one deer is fine, and they saw what I was doing and that I wasn't a threat or a harm to them, then it was like, come back whenever you want. They text me. I gave them deer meat. They were so happy and grateful that now they're like, it's a half-hour conversation every time I see them. They're like, how are you? How's everything going? How's your family? Like, it's like, now we built this bond, and they're like, come whenever you want. You can park in our driveway, everything. So it's
that's awesome. And the thing, too, is people who aren't from New Jersey may not actually understand this, but people from New Jersey are not welcoming people. For the most part, I don't want to generalize everyone and put everybody into one jar. But I guess the further south you get, the less people act that way. But where I'm from, it's no, this is mine. This is my property, my toy, my whatever. Go away. We have a neighbor growing up who'd call my house if we parked in front of her house on the street. You know what I mean? So it's like
as someone knocking on the door. Also, everyone's so afraid of a lawsuit too. So. Another thing I could suggest to people is, you know, how they have like the hunter's insurance.
Like, or yeah, that or well, a waiver.
If you can get the hunter's insurance, I think it's like $40 for the year or something like that. It's nothing.
It's nothing.
Get it because they give you the form with your name on it saying you're insured in case something were to happen. You could present that to somebody. Make, listen, if something happens on your property, I am insured here. You are not going to be responsible at all. If I fall out of the tree, that's on me. I have the insurance. So that definitely helps.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're a competition archer stepping to the line in the finals or a hunter drawing back on your personal best, you owe it to yourself and the animal to have the best functioning equipment out there. That's why when it comes to bow or arrow components, the Wing and Tail boys pick Fire Knock products every time. Every product they make is proven to outperform anything already on the market by 50% or more, and they have the science to back it up. They've even made it so easy to find the components specific to your aero shaft with their FireKnock Aero Component Selector. If you're ready to up your equipment's performance today, check out FireKnock.com.
So we have property in New York. I think I said that a little earlier. And my dad made it very clear, anyone is welcome on our property. And not so much to hunt just yet. It's only 130 acres, you know. So we have three guys that hunt it. Three guys on 130 isn't not doable, but even three people on 130 is the pressure. If you don't watch what you're doing, one person can ruin 100 acres, right? So we haven't really welcomed anyone to come and hunt outside the family, like cousins and uncles and stuff like that. But anyone is allowed to come and enjoy the property. You want to come and ride the quad? Cool. You want to come and shoot some rifles? Cool. But you got to sign a waiver first, to the point where my now wife had to sign a waiver to come and ride on a ATV with me when we were still dating. And it's not because my dad wants to be an asshole or anything like that. It's just he's covering his own ass. How do I know?
It's understandable. Nobody wants to get sued. I don't want to be sitting in court and be like, I got to come up with $80,000 or $60,000 because this guy broke his arm on my property or fell off a quad. You know, I get it.
Yeah. Now I gotta say this, and you're a police officer, so I guess you're the right person to talk to. This is not even hunting. I guess it's technically hunting related, but I get so bent out of shape when I hear laws in New Jersey, like even if your property is posted and even if it says no trespassing and even if it says beware of dog and even if your gates are locked, if somebody finds a way to enter your property and breaks their leg because they stepped in a pothole, you may or may not have a lawsuit on your hands. Like, how does that even work?
I'll be honest with you. I'm a police officer in a city, so we don't really have that problem. In New Jersey, it's Asbury Park.
Gotcha.
I
got you. Yep.
Yeah, we don't really have that problem. Our problems are a different type of problem.
A lot worse than that.
You get trespassers. And we just, we handle them accordingly. And if they need to be arrested for trespassing, we do it. So I can't answer that for you. And especially that's more of like a attorney thing. That's not a cop.
Yeah, that's fair. And when you're knocking on doors, because as I'm talking to you, I was waiting for you to drop the, and I just let them know that I'm a police officer. But that literally didn't come out until this guy was like battling with you, right? So I don't want to say use the fact that you're a police officer to get into a property, but do you use the fact that you are a law enforcement officer to just ease everyone's mind just a little bit and saying like, hey, I am a good guy. Like, I'm not some crazy asshole here trying to, trespass on your land or anything like
that. So I'll say this. It's definitely helped. However, that's not my first go-to because look at the world we live in. Everybody hates cops now, right? So I don't know, again, they don't know me and I don't know them. And I could be like, hey, listen, I'm a police officer. And they're like, well, we fucking hate cops. And absolutely not. Yeah. So I don't really push that, use that to my advantage. I try to just go in there again like a person and have a normal conversation. First of all, if you get a knock on your door and some guy's standing there with a clipboard, right? You're going to be like, all right, what does this guy want? What's he trying to sell me? Close the door in his face. We're not home. Whatever. It's the same feeling because they don't know you. You don't know them. If you could talk to somebody and have a conversation and introduce them and let them know you, like let them in and actually know you and understand you, your odds are definitely a lot higher.
I agree with that. And I guess that ties in with the whole resume thing that I was talking about earlier. You're giving them an opportunity to see who you are more than just a 30-second conversation after knocking on the door.
I don't know if I agree with the resume thing just because you don't know these people and you don't know like, hey, I'm going to give them all my information. Like, what are they going to do with it? So I don't know if I agree with making a resume. I pretty much stand on like, let's have a conversation, get to know me like this. And if you don't know by the end of that conversation of like, hey, we can let this guy hunt here or not, and it's going to continue to like, I don't know. I feel like I wouldn't want to be leaving my information because I'll tell you this. I got permission to hunt this spot from the owner. It's like a double, what do they call it? Like they have two houses on the property. So it's, like two pieces of property is one almost, right?
I got you.
Yeah, they split up into two parcels, whatever. And there's woods behind them. I get permission from the guy. He says, listen, I own the both houses. You can hunt here. He said, my sister lives in the one house. Awesome. Guy liked me a lot. We had a great conversation. We spoke everything. You can hunt there. Yes. I give you permission. He wrote permission, give me written permission, everything. So I go there. And I set up a camera, and the sister comes out, and she was older, and I'm talking to her, and she says, you know, I said, hey, I have permission from your brother. You know, I told her everything. It was when I was working at I was a police officer, but I was also working at a golf course. And I was like, this is how I know your brother. He's a member at the golf course. He was like, no problem. No problem. Okay. I swear to God, about an hour later, I got the township police calling me saying, were you just on somebody's property? I was like, yeah, I just put up a camera there to hunt. They think you're a fake cop because I told her, I said, she's like, oh, you work at the golf course? I said, yeah, you know, I'm also a police officer. So, you know, I'm going to be safe. I'm going to be in the back, you know, away from everything. An hour later, the township police are calling me. This lady thinks you're a fake cop. She said that you came there and that she doesn't know you're a fake cop. And I was like, what? The lady wound up being like a nut, right? So I call her brother and I said, hey, sir, listen, this is what just happened. Like, you know, I want to hunt the property, but if this is going to be something, like, she called me freaking out, you need to move the camera. And she called, like, the police on me. I said, he totally apologized. I said, listen, you know what? I appreciate it. I appreciate the offer of you, you know, allowing me to hunt here. But I wound up not getting it. I said, I don't need the headache. You know, I don't need the headache. You know, hunting is supposed to be relaxing. Get away and enjoy. I don't want to have to, like, I'm going to go to this spot. I got to worry if she comes out and starts yelling at me. I got to worry, like, you know, I don't need that. I don't need the aggravation.
And honestly, I don't blame you. Now, I'm sure that if in that little period of time you got like a booner on camera, that you'd have been like, you know what? She's worth the headache.
Funny story. You know, this deer right here, the year that I shot him, I told you I was hunting hard. So my buddy lives like maybe, I don't know, 2.5-3 miles down the road. And I said to him, I said, dude, I'm chasing this buck. I'm confident he's in the woods back behind your house. And he's like, you are more than welcome to come here and hunt. Absolutely. I said, okay. So he's like, just walk through the back gate, and because they have a gate up for their dog. And he's like, you know, you can go, the gate opens. He's like, go and you can hunt right there in the back. He's like, I have all the property in the back. You can hunt. I said, awesome, dude. I appreciate it. So I put out the camera. I put out the corn. Sure shit, I get pictures of him. He's there chasing the doe. I actually got him pictures of him mounting the doe and everything. Like, he's there. And I'm like, solid. I set up the first hunt, and he didn't come in. So I said, all right, I'm going to come back. A couple days later, I get up in the stand, and I'm sitting there all day, and the deer are finally starting to move. I'm like, all right, here we go. All of a sudden, the dog comes running out. And I'm like, looking in the back over my shoulder, because he's running against the fence line, because he sees the deer. And then he comes back in the house. And all of a sudden, I hear a ball get kicked back to the fence again. And I'm like, so I look, I'm looking over my shoulder. The kid's girlfriend didn't like hunting. So instead of just texting me and asking me, like, hey, you know, I know I allowed you to hunt here, but my girlfriend doesn't want you to hunt. She's out there kicking the ball to the fence, screaming, because she saw the deer coming in, and she didn't want me to shoot the deer. I was so pissed off, because I'm like, why didn't you just text me and tell me, hey, don't hunt today. I wouldn't have sat here all day so she could kick a ball at the fence and have the dog run out and scare the deer.
You know what the worst part is with that? It's, and I'm sure you're aware of this, it is illegal to purposely tamper with a hunter, to purposely interfere with their legal hunting. But there's not a game warden or police officer that I've ever met that would actually do anything about that.
Realistically, I'm on their property. They're allowing me to be there. What am I going to do? Fight with them? And then I didn't want to cause problems for him and hit, like his girlfriend and him. So I was like, you know what, dude? I texted him. I said, listen, man, this is what happened. You know, and then he was like, yeah, she doesn't want you to hunt here anymore. I'm sorry. I said, no problem. I don't want to cause any issues between you guys. I'll pack my stuff up and I'll head out. So I did. I got my tree stand. I got out of there, and I never went back there again. That goes into what you were saying, you know, like, it sucks. Some, you win some, you lose some.
You really do, you know, I've never had to deal with that. I got to be honest, because it was either my parents, this property that my parents got in New York is the only private land I've ever hunted in all of the time I've ever hunted. I've always simply been a public land hunter. So I've never had to deal with anything like that. But every time I'm driving around, I'm always keeping my eyes open now. I always have my Onyx. This might sound crazy. I literally always have Onyx or Spartan Forge or Hunt Stand or some kind of app open when I'm driving. And if I see deer anywhere, doe, I honestly spend more time focusing on doe because I want to know where those doe are kind of hanging out. I mark everything I see on the map. I'm thinking at some point I may go out and ask for permission around here, because where I teach is literally in the middle of a state park or whatever it is. It's public land. And I literally, I was just talking about this in the last episode where I drive down the road and I can keep an eye on everything. I see at what point in the year do the vehicles start to pick up on the road. It's like, okay, November, the people start coming out during rifle season. Great. So I got to get the job done during bow season, you know? So yeah, man, we're at about an hour. I know you said hour was your cutoff, but to be honest with you, there's a lot of stuff I wanted to get into that we actually haven't gotten to yet. Like I wanted to try to get into like how you take a new property and break it down kind of thing. But again, I told you I wanted to be respectful of your time. So how would you feel about?
Yeah, if you want, I can stay on for another 15 minutes and then I got the baby. So I got a jet. 5 months.
Wait, how old? No shit, man. I got a 3 month old.
Yeah, baby, first
you
one.
As well. First one.
The whole world changed, right?
Same here, bro.
I don't know how I'm going to get out. I told my wife when we first started dating, I said, listen, I'm letting you know I'm a huge bow hunter. And, you know, if you can't handle me being gone most of the time during bow season, I'm not the guy for you. And she was like, no, that's fine. It's cool. Like, I like, you know, that's fine, whatever. And then now that I got the kid, I'm like, how am I going to break this to her? That like, I still got to hunt.
You're still doing it. She said it's cool until it's not, you know? So how about this? Let's spend the next few minutes talking about this. Cause I haven't, to be honest with you, I've talked to other people who have kids, but they have like multiple, and I haven't had this like fresh into fatherhood type of thing. So why don't we spend the next couple minutes talking about this and then not rush the rest of it and just have you back for part two if you're down. So same thing, bro. When I started dating my now wife, so we've dated on and off for 10 years until we finally decided we were being fucking stupid and we just needed to make it happen. Right. And I told her something similar when it came to hunting, but I was more adamant about leaving Jersey. Like I knew 15 years ago, I would not die in New Jersey. You know, I didn't want to do it. And she was a Jersey princess. She was going to die at the beach. She was going to live in her parents' house. And that was her thing, man. And I'm fortunate that she has been so open. Dude, I've said it a couple times on the podcast. I got to give my wife so much credit. I don't give her enough credit. I really don't. Like, she deals with my shit all year long. Like, she thought hunting season was September to December. It ain't December.
I swear to God, my wife today was yelling at me before because I told her, I just got one of these, it's a turkey target, you know, like a 3D target. And I got a brand new 3D deer target. And I'm like, man.
So you well, got to break them in.
She started yelling at me. So I told you my birthday's in a couple days. We're having a little party. And I'm like, we go to our storage unit. And I'm like, all right, I'll take these with us now. She's like, for what? I'm like, well, we'll start shooting. Season's in a couple weeks. I'll start shooting again. And she's like, you're not putting it out now. We're having people over in a couple days. I said, yeah, no, it'll be fine. She's like, you're not leaving it out. I'm like, listen, I get I'm not leaving it out. But it's going to go out today and we'll stay there. You know? And... All right, so
until the party,
I won half the battle. I got the deer out, but I didn't. I said, "All right, I'll leave the turkey in here." She's like, "It's not even turkey season." I said, "I know, but it's still, you know, it's fun to shoot a turkey." But sure. Like I said, I won half the battle. I got the deer target out, so I'm shooting that.
Sure, sure. So your
daughter
or son?
Yeah,
same. Yeah, man, dude, she's got these long legs, blue eyes, blonde hair, the longest fucking
eyelashes.
That's
exactly, you just described my daughter. I'm like,
dude, I am so fucking scared.
No, my wife knows.
Dude, you know that scene from Bad Boys 2?
The answer to the door. My wife knows. She's like, I just feel bad for anybody who like comes in and fucks with her. Because my whole life I've done MMA and fought and done jiu-jitsu and everything on top. And I'm not trying to say this. I'm a pretty good shot. I've done shooting competitions for the PD and yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I sure as fuck hope so. You're a police officer.
Listen, I've seen some people I work with shoot, and I tell them, listen, just throw the fucking gun at the person. I'm more worried about you shooting me than somebody else. Yeah. So,
right.
But she says, I just feel sorry for anybody who ever comes in and does anything wrong to our daughter.
Dude, 100%. So talk to me a little bit about what it was. So my thing is, I'm a big scouter. I enjoy just being in the woods, walking around, getting myself set up. And this past season, so we had a little bit of a high risk pregnancy. There was some crazy stuff going on early on. We were scared about some things or whatever. So for the rest of the pregnancy, it was in the back of my head, like, shit, something can go wrong at like any time. And I drastically reduced the amount of time I spent in the woods scouting. You know, again, I teach in the woods that I hunt in. So it wasn't anything for me to take an extra 30 minutes to go out and walk around. But let's be honest, how much are you really covering in 30 minutes? So what kind of struggles did you deal with the on the scouting side of things, both during the pregnancy and right after your daughter was born? Because it actually, so if my daughter was born in April, yours was February? Okay, so your daughter was born literally in the middle of the tail end of Jersey bow hunting.
My daughter was born. I'm going to sound terrible, man. My daughter was born, and a couple of days later, I was in the woods hunting. And I told my listeners a couple of days later. Yeah, of course.
But you were there for the birth.
I'm not.
Okay, no harm, no foul.
So, I definitely was hunting, and then turkey season came around, and I went hunting. No problem. Like, again, she doesn't bother me. My wife's great. I don't, she doesn't bother me if I tell her, hey, I'm going to go hunting. Again, I definitely slowed down with things. Like, I'm so behind this year. Like, normally I would have cameras ready to go. Like, these spots, I write down all my spots. I'm looking at pictures from last year and the year, the previous spots and see, like, okay, this could be a potential shooter. Maybe focus on this spot and doing that type of homework. But I have it between work and the baby and everything. And we just moved into this place. So it's definitely put me back.
Bro, we're living literally mirror lives of each other. My wife and I just bought this house last April. We moved in last June. We found out we were pregnant on Labor Day weekend. So it's just been one thing after the other, all in a good,
great.
It's all good stuff. Like, I'm not complaining whatsoever, but I now find myself. So here's my predicament. I have always been really good at locating deer, just finding the sign. Like I said earlier, I'm really good at finding sign. I'm really good at figuring out where the deer are. And honestly, I'm pretty damn good at finding doe. Last year humbled the shit out of me, but my whole life in Jersey, I could go out and shoot a doe whenever the fuck I want. And last year really humbled me. But now I'm going into this year and I'm saying, okay, I've really been trying to figure out how to hunt. I've been trying to, so I'm good at finding the sign. And it's like, how do I take from the sign and figure out what to do with it? Right. So I'm just now starting to figure that out. And now I have this whole other wrench thrown into it. Again, not a bad thing, but another thing that says, oh, hey, all that time that you, the minimal time you already had, now it's cut in half. So my big dilemma now is trying to figure out, okay, how do I make it happen with less time?
All right. So I'm in the same boat. I'm thinking the same thing. Like, all right, how am I going to spend my time doing what I love, but also being with the people I love? Because there's only so many hours in the day. I think what I've personally come up with was maybe take a step back for now on hunting as much and just try to go out. And this is also going to come into something else I think of all the time too, where I get like, I miss the days of just going out and hunting. I miss the days of like I get super excited now, but like I miss the days of like, I guess the unknown and like, I don't know. I want to say like, just when I first started hunting, like nobody hunted, right? And it wasn't this cool thing. Like it's now like a status to be like, yeah, I'm a bow hunter, or like, yeah, I hunt. And I just feel like the thrill of it has just got pushed to like, everyone's like, I hunt and this and that. And the thrill of it, they almost like took away from the thrill of being like, okay, yeah, I hunt. Because now you're going on Instagram and it's just like every other person is doing it. Every other person is like trying to be cool and do it. And it just kind of takes away from like the excitement of it. It's like, you have social media. All these kids now wearing a Bass Pro hat. Half of them don't even know what a bass is and never went fishing. And it's just like, I don't know. Like, it takes away from it because, it's looked at as like this label or this status. And it's like, I don't want to be that label or status. That's not why I got into this. Wearing a Bass Pro shirt or a hat because I want to be a part of that. It's like, I wore it because this is what I do.
Let me ask you this. You're saying how the fact that more people are out there hunting and it's on social media more and it's more in your face is basically what I'm getting from what you're saying. Do you think that, and you're saying that it's taking away from the end, the outcome for you. Do you think that part of you, whether it's on purpose or not, do you think a part of you is comparing what you're doing to what is going on social media? Because I could say 100% that when I started this channel and I put the pressure on myself that it was like, well, I'm a hunting podcast. I have a hunting channel on YouTube. I got to get it done. And I put so much pressure on myself. And I told you last year I was very humbled. Because again, I'm trying so hard to get it done and I didn't have the results that I had in the past. And it's like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't want to say I'm comparing myself to other people, because the truth is I'm new to the area. Jersey deer are never going to meet the caliber that Iowa deer are going to meet. It's just not going to happen. But the pressure to just get something done, I feel that because I'm in the space. Do you feel like the presence on social media is driving this idea that I'm not having as much fun at it because I'm not meeting the caliber that others
are? I mean, I'll put it to you this way. I started when Instagram first was a big thing, right? Back in like 2012, 13, it started becoming very popular, right? So I created the Instagram account, Jersey Outdoors. And you can go back and look at like the first post. I think it was like 2012, 2013. And the whole reason of that was not because I wanted like, not fame, but like publicity. It was to teach everybody, because Jersey was like this hidden gem, right? Like, everybody overlooked Jersey of like, oh, Jersey.
It really
so
is.
It was it more really of like is. A, hey, we're from Jersey. We hunt, we fish. You can do this stuff here. And I wanted to just like, it, not teach, but show people like it can be done in Jersey. And then as I started getting older and harvesting like nice deer and the group of guys that I hunt with, we all strive to shoot like bigger, mature bucks. You know, everybody starts looking at it like, holy shit. Look at the deer that these guys are killing in Jersey. So it wasn't like a thing for, you know, publicity and all that at first. And then as it grew and like, you know, Instagram grew and people started, you know, showing like the hunting industry, then it became more of like a, not a job, but like, you know, you're posting to show everybody like, oh, look at the deer I just shot. And then I feel like it does take away from the actual hunt. And whether you can ask any Instagram influencer, and I'm not an influencer, right? But you can ask any of these influencers or whatever. I don't know. It just, it takes away from it. Cause they're only doing it for the, like for Instagram, right? They're doing it for the gram. Yeah. Do it for the gram. Like
for the gram.
Doing this stuff for the gram. They're not doing it because of the passion that they have. And that's where, like I said, with the Jersey Outdoors, like we were doing that stuff before it was a thing. So that's where I feel like in a way, I get what you're saying, like do this stuff because of that, but in a way I feel as in like, hey, I was doing this before it was a thing. You know, like I feel as in we were doing this before all these people and influencers and kids and whoever were like posting it for the gram. You know, I feel as if like these kids now, and I say these kids, I say people now, I should say, people are just doing this for the publicity and trying to become the next big thing. And they never really got to maybe experience the, like, what it was like to actually enjoy the outdoors.
The joys of just finding a rub or a scrape,
yeah,
and thinking you just
that were like,
gold,
you
basically.
Know, I had pictures from my first trail camp, and like I would get like basket 8-pointers and be like, dude, that deer is a stud. Like, I want to hunt that deer. I would be excited. And now because of social media, it takes deer, you know, and I guess I could be to blame for this too, but I, you know, deer that are 140, 150, 160-inch deer that people are posting, and now it's all a numbers game. Like you can go on most people's Instagrams, and all they're posting is 150-inch deer. I shot a 200, you know, this season I was able to take 150-inch deer, 250-inch deer. It's like, again, it's the numbers are taking away from the hunt. It's like, oh, I don't want to shoot that deer because it's not a 130 or a 140. But you forget, like, the joy of hunting. And is it nice to shoot a mature 140-inch deer? Absolutely. Should you feel proud about it? Yes. It's an accomplishment. It's not every day. But don't lose that vision of why you started to hunt just because everybody else is posting 150-inch deer. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Now, for me, don't get me wrong, I would love to shoot 150-incher. This deer on my wall right now is the biggest deer I have to date. Really cool hunt. Got it over bait. We could talk about that at a later date if you want. But for me, like, yeah, I always go in the woods looking for a big deer, but to be honest with you, I always shot at the first deer that was legal and I could take because I love the meat, you know? And it's not about like, yeah, we have friendly family competition. It's like, oh, I have the bigger deer of the family right now until the next person shoots it. You know what I mean? But now that I have this channel, not that I feel, how do I want to put this? Not that I feel like I need to shoot a big deer to fit in, but I honestly feel like I need to regularly shoot quality deer to be valid, right? Like, to be honest, I feel like I've had phenomenal conversations with great people, including yourself, right? But at the end of the day, when people are looking for a podcast to listen to, they're gonna pick the guys who have big deer on the wall or have that big deer on a cover photo or something like that, you know, just because like I was honest in the very beginning of this podcast, I literally said, I am not a professional hunter. I am not a master hunter. I am a guy who's been hunting his whole life, who is now learning how to hunt, you know? So like, I never came into this space claiming to be the pro or the master or the one-stop shop for everything. But I also feel like if I don't put something on the ground that's valuable to others, never mind what's valuable to me. If I don't put on the ground what's valuable to others, then I'm not going to be validated in the conversations I'm having. Which, never mind me, fuck me. That is unfair to the guests that I have, because the guests that I have on here do know what the hell they're talking about and they do have success, you know? And it's, that's the part.
I will say this. There's been times I'll catch myself on Instagram and I'm looking and I'll see like somebody post like a smaller buck and I catch myself afterwards and I'm like, why would you shoot that? And then I forget, just because what I'm doing and like what I'm looking to hunt is not what everyone's looking to do. And I catch myself and I'm like, you know what? Congratulations to that dude who shot that deer, because that may be his biggest buck. That may have been his last hunt with his father. That may be his, you know what I'm saying? And I catch myself and it's like, again, what I want to do and what I want to shoot is so, and this is where I'm selfish, because I know what I want to shoot. Like, you know, I particularly try to shoot 140 inch deer or bigger every year. Not to say I'm, you know, sticking my nose up at 130 inch deer, but it's just not what I want. Yeah,
that's where you're at in your journey. That's where you are in your journey. You've shot enough deer smaller than that that you're like, you know what? I've done them. You see 130 walk by and you say, you know what? That'll be great for a kid or a first time hunter or someone who may be on their last
hunt. Out hunting with me to my spots and be like, dude, if any deer comes in that you want to shoot, shoot them. I don't want somebody to be turned away from hunting because they're not shooting 140 inch deer. Like it's very hard to do that in New Jersey. Like you have to pass up deer consistently to get 140s, right? You're not just going to walk into the woods and be like, all right, there's a 140, there's a 150, I want to shoot that 140. Like, that's not how it works. You have to put the time in, you have to pass 120s and 130s so that they can grow and turn into 140s and bigger.
Yeah. And I'm going to end the conversation on this because, again, I've said it quite a few times. I want to be mindful of your time. We're over what you were willing to give me today. I feel that the hunting industry is at a turning point right now where you go in the store, every broadhead, big buck on it. Every bag of seed, big buck on it. You watch a TV show, big bucks getting shot only. Somebody shoots a deer. Oh, you're going to shoot that little ass deer? What are we doing for the new people who are coming into this sport? Like, yeah, don't get me wrong. You and I can talk about it and say, you know what? If it makes you happy, go ahead and shoot it and everything's great. And there are other podcasters like the Southern Outdoorsman and other people who are doing this. They're saying the same thing and they're all saying the right thing. But let's be honest, the majority of the hunting industry doesn't function that way. And if we're going to set the bar so high for these new people coming into the sport to something that most hunters in their lifetime can never achieve, what makes us think that we're going to get new people to join our
sport? You're not. They're going to be turned away and they're going to be, you know, like discouraged. Quick little story for you that has to do with this. Yeah. You know, at the time I was younger, I think I've only shot like one or two bucks, not really nice bucks, nothing giant, like just good bucks, right? Like mature deer. And we were doing a deer drive and the drive didn't even start yet. And I'm sitting there and it was during the rut and I watched, like it was all tall grass, like shrubs. And I watched the shrubs are going back and forth and I hear grunting and I watch a doe come running out. And then I watch a little spike behind her. And then I watch this like this six pointer come running out. I'm like, holy shit. And I shot him, drilled him. He ran 30 yards and he dropped. And I'm like, I got one, guys. And they're like, the drive didn't even start yet. Wait, I was so excited. I'm like, dude, I just killed like a nice buck. Afterwards, the guys I was hunting with and we're doing the deer drive with, I come walking up to the deer and it's a nice six pointer. It's posted on my Instagram. You can see it. And a couple of the guys were like, why'd you even shoot that? And I was like, what? And they're like, why'd you even shoot that? And this is why I catch myself. And I'm like, dude, like I'm a fucking nobody, right? If somebody wants to shoot thing, let them, like, you don't have to put your two cents in. You don't have to say, you know, because I was so, like, heartbroken. Like, I was so excited about this deer. I was so, like, dude, that deer, the drive didn't even start yet. And I was just sitting on the trail where I thought they would come out from. And it all worked out. And, like, I was able to shoot this deer just sitting there. And I was so, like, taken back. Like, I was a little pissed off. Like, just because you shot big bucks and you don't think this is, like, a nice deer. To me, it was, like, a great, I had so much fun. And like, I really was excited about it. But I remember feeling pissed off because that dude was like, why'd you even shoot that? Like, that's a small buck. And I was like, listen, you've shot nice deer. This is a nice deer for me. So that's where I say, like, I catch myself sometimes. Yeah. And I'm like, you know what? just because I've shot nice deer, everybody's not at that point yet, or maybe that they're not looking for a 140. They're just happy at the first thing they see.
Yeah. Now I will say this, I agree with you 100%, except when it comes to the private property, where we're planting food plots and we're trying to manage the deer population and stuff like that. Now, granted, if a kid comes out, first time hunter, whatever, like everything's fair game. If it's legal, drop it. I don't care. But I'm not going to lie. I have my brother shot a deer before and I looked at him like, dude, after all the work,
agree with that. Gonna shoot that. I totally agree with that. Are you kidding me? Like if you have a private spot, you're putting time and work in to grow bigger deer because you want to harvest a bigger buck. Don't go out there and shoot a 100-inch deer. It's just not. Yeah. Why would you do that?
Exactly. But when it comes to, again, when it comes to public land, if it's a doe, it comes out and excites you and you shoot it, awesome, man. Give me a call. I'll help you drag it out. We'll do the whole thing. So Matt, I want to thank you so much for joining me here today. It was a great conversation. I really enjoyed it. Honestly, it went a lot smoother than I thought. Like I said, before we started this up, I think I told you like, this is like only the second episode I've ever done where I didn't really have any background on the guests that I had. So this went really well. Now, I will tell you this, my episodes, I turn my episodes in every Tuesday to post every Thursday. This episode will post, I'm expecting it to post a week from today. So next Thursday, if we can record part two before the following Tuesday, I can post part one and part two back to back. And we can make that work.
If yeah, not, I'd love no to hop problem, back on with you. I really appreciate you having me, man. It's a good conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys, as always, if you found some value in this conversation, go ahead, share it with a friend. Leave us a little 5-star review if you're on Spotify and a 5-star written review if you're over on Apple Podcast. Really goes a long way with helping this channel, our group, our podcast, and all that good stuff. As always, if you scroll down to the bottom of this description, you will find links to all of the supporters of this channel, including a fantastic discount to the Nested Tree Stand System. So go ahead, use that link, check it out. Use the discount code WT10 for 10% off of your order. Yeah. So with that being said, again, Matt, thanks again for your time. Look forward to having you back next week to continue this conversation. And for the listeners, God bless. Have a great week. And as always, remember, success is just a commitment away. Have a great week, guys.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network. And this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.